The sixth chapter of Hilchos Avodah Zarah covers six mitzvahs of the 51 mitzvahs the Rambam enumerated in the introduction that are dealt with in Hilchos Avodah Zarah. Perek Shishi deals with mitzvahs Chav Dalet, Chav Hei, Chav Vav, Chav Zayin, Chav Ches, Chav Tes. Let's read them briefly in the words of the Rambam in his introduction. Mitzvah Chav Dalet is not to practice something we call Oiv, which will be explained. Next mitzvah is not to practice something called Yidoini. Next one is not to pass your children through the god called Melech. The next one is not to create and erect a monument. Mitzvah Chav Ches is not to bow down on kneeling stone. And the last mitzvah Chav Tes is not to plant an Asherah tree. These six mitzvahs will be discussed, elaborated upon, and elucidated in the sixth chapter of Hilchos Avodah Kechavim. Says the Rambam, Perek Shishi Halacha Aleph. Somebody who practices this form of idolatry and black magic called oiv or yidoini, which will be explained, and he does it voluntarily, with his own volition, and he does this willingly and intentionally, chayiv kares, he is liable to a heavenly death penalty. If there were witnesses, and the witnesses also warned him, according to all of the laws of what consists an appropriate warning in the Torah, so that the person really, really knew and acknowledged what he's getting into, then afterwards, niskal, then this person might get a death penalty through stoning. Hayashaygik, what if he did this act, but he performed it inadvertently? He did not know that it's prohibited, or he did not know the severity of the prohibition, or the consequences, the penalties, maybe chatas kvua, then he brings, in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, he would bring a regular sin offering. Ketzad Maisa Ha'if. What was the practice of this idolatry or black magic witchcraft called Oiv? Zesho Oimed Omakti Ktoiris Yidua. Somebody who would stand and burn a known incense. In other words, there was a particular forms of incense or herbs that would be burnt and consumed in the flames, and these herbs, these incenses were known to those who practiced this form of witchcraft or black magic called Oiv. So that's the first thing. They had a special ktoiris, special types of incense that they would burn. Then he holds a branch of a myrtle, a hadas, a branch of a myrtle in his hand, and he waves it. While the incense is being consumed in the flames, he is waving a hadas branch. And he speaks quietly, saying words and incantations that were known to those who practiced this form of black magic. There were special incantations and words and mantras that they would utter as the flames are consuming and burning the incense. As he's waving the myrtle branch, he's also uttering incantations. Atcha yishma ha-shayil, until the person who came to the one who's practicing the oiv black magic, the person who came with a question, can hear, ki'ilu echad medabirimai, as though somebody is communicating with him, umishivu yal mashu shayil, and answering what he has asked, giving him an answer to his question. Bidvarim itachas ha'aretz, it sounds like the words are coming from below the earth. Bekol namuch ad ma'oid, with a very low voice. Ukiilu einu nikr lo'oizin elo machshava margishboy, it's as though it wasn't heard by the physical ear, but rather felt in one's imagination. V'chein, a similar form of the practice of oiv is halekeach gulgoilus hameis, somebody who takes the skull of a dead person, of a corpse, umakter lo, and burns incense to her, to the skull, umenachesh ba, and performs various forms of black magic and sorcery, rather through different types of words, incantations, mantras, looking at it in different ways. Menachesh is different forms of magic practice that are not involved with action, but rather with thoughts or words or the gaze of the eyes. So he does all of these things with the skull as the incense is being consumed. Until he hears as though there was a voice emerging from below his armpit. Shafil Admaid. A very low voice, umeshivai, and this voice is answering him on his questions. Kol elo maisa oivhein. All of these are part of the practice we call oiv v'ha'isa echad mehen niskal. And someone who does one of them, the Rambam enumerated here, do two different types of practices, The one who does one of them, niskal, is liable to the death penalty through stoning. Why does the Rambam repeat again niskal when he said in the beginning of halacha that somebody who practices oiv could get skila? Of course, the answer to that would be the Rambam is very meticulous. Because he said if you do oiv or yidoini, you get skila, but then he gave two different types of oiv practices. You might think that in order to be liable for the death penalty, you have to do both of them. So the Rambam concludes and he says, no, ha'isa echad mehen, if you do one of these two practices of oiv, niskal. Halacha base, ketzad maisa hayidoini. We explained what oiv is. What is the practice of the yidoini form of witchcraft? Maniach etzem oiv sheshmoya dua bepiv. He takes the bone of a bird, and the name of this bird was yadua. That was the name of this bird. And he takes a bone of this bird, and he places it in his mouth. It's interesting that Rashi explains yadua is actually a beast, an animal. But the Rambam says it's etzem oiv, it's the bone of a bird. And the source for that may be in Zohar, one of the places where we see a source of Rambam in Zohar, Parshas Balak, where the Zohar says that Balak was actually somebody who practiced this yidoini form of witchcraft, and he took the bone of a bird. So this bird is called Yadua. The person takes the bone of this bird, places it in his mouth. Umaktir, once again, he burns various forms of incense. And then he does all different types of actions, the Rambam says. Different strange forms of actions that he's doing as the incense is being burnt and as this bone of the bird Yadua is in his mouth. In Sefer HaMitzvahs, Loisas Ates, the Rambam adds over here by Yidoini that he's mispalal tfilos. He utters all types of prayers and says all types of incantations. But here he says, Oisa Maisis Acheris. He does all different forms of action, different types of actions. Ache Yipoil. Until he falls down as though he just had an epileptic seizure. And he starts communicating with his mouth, foretelling things that will happen in the future. All these types of practices are forms of idolatry, the Rambam says. In other words, each of them, besides being type of sorcery and black magic and witchcraft, the Rambam says, I'm putting it right here in Perek Shishi because they're actually forms of Avodah Zarah, where the person is divorced, is disaligned from the notion that there's only oneness in the universe. The person attributes power, influence to different things in nature and in our world outside of Hashem. The person does not realize, Einoid Malvadei, that the world has one singular master and the entire world is created and governed and orchestrated and guided by one singular creator, and everything else is kigarzen beyad achaitzev, everything else is like an axe in the hand of the chopper. As the Rambam explained in the earlier chapters, what Avodah Zarah is, here the person is attributing significant power, dominance, prominence to various forces, objects within the universe. So the Rambam says, these are all different forms of Avodah Zarah. Vazhara shalahen minayin. There is no punishment without a warning in Torah. The Torah does state clearly in Vayikra the punishment for Oiv and Yidoini. The Torah says in Vayikra Perek Chaf that the punishment is Skila, be'evin yirgamu oisam. But where's the warning? Says the Rambam, the warning is Vayikra Perek Yutes, Al Tifnu, Talmud Lomer, Al Tifnu, Al Oivis, Vel Hayidoinim. Do not pay attention, do not get lured into the practice of the Oivis and the Yidoinim. Halacha Gimel. Another form of Avodah Zarah called Melech, the god of the fire god. Hanoisin Mizari LaMelech. If somebody gives some of his children to the idolatry called Melech, Birtzoinai Bizad, and if he does this voluntarily, willingly, Chayev Karis, he is liable to a heavenly death penalty, B'Shoigeg. If he does this inadvertently, meaning he does not know that it's prohibited, or he doesn't know the consequences, maybe Chatas Kvua, he brings a regular sin offering, Vim Asa Basra Ve'edim. But if he did this, if he followed this practice of giving his children to the Melech, he did this with witnesses and with warning, he was forewarned, and witnesses, then the Rambam says, Niskal. Then he is liable for the death penalty through stoning. Shenemar, the pasuk says in Vayikra Chaf, Ishish mibnei Yisrael ashayitin mizari lemoylech, mois yumas ama'aretz yirgimu ba'oven. If somebody gives from his children to the Moylech God, he shall die. The common folk shall stone him with rock. Vazhara shalai minayit. Where's the warning for this person? Talmud Leimar, therefore the Torah says, also in Vayikra, Parshas Acharei Mois, Umizaracha leisitin lahavir lamaylach. From your children, you should not give any of them to be passed through the maylach. Ulahalana waiman. There's also a second pasuk, a second warning, which is in Parshas Shoiftim. In Sefer Dvarim, lo yimotze becha mavir b'noi ubitoi ba'esh. We should not find among you somebody who will pass his son and his daughter through fire. So here, the warning actually consists of two psukim. One pasuk is in Parshas Acharei Mois, where he says, don't give over your children to have them pass through the Meilech. And the second pasuk is, don't have your son or your daughter be passed through fire. Ketzad hoyu oisim. How would they do this? What was the practice called Meilech? Says the Rambam, Madlik Eish Gedoyle, he would light a huge fire, V'lekeach Miktzazari, and then take some of his children, U'moistre la'koymrin oivdeya Eish, and give over this child or these children to the priests who were worshipping this god of fire. He would give over the child or the children to these priests, so to speak, consecrating these children, dedicating them to this priest and to this idolatry called Moloch. After the priests received the child from the father, the priest would give the child back to the father in order so that the father should pass this child through the fire under their permission, gaze, and authority. It's the father of the child who passes his son through the fire under the authority and with the permission and consent as an agent of the priests. He passes his child through the fire from one side of the fire to the other side of the fire, through the midst of the fire. Biraglai, as the child is walking on his feet. So it seems like the Rambam is saying, at least according to many Mefarshim, he can't pass through the fire himself, holding his child above the fire or on his shoulder or on his head. No, he walks through the child on his own feet, on the child's feet, he walks the child through the fire, not on the side of the fire. The child with his own feet walks through the fire, and the father passes him through the fire from one side to the other side. I should say that some Mefarshim understand the Rambam Biragla is referring not to the child, but to the father. But the literal, I think, straightforward interpretation is Mavir Oisai, he's talking about the child, Mavir Oisai Biraglai, he passes the child through with the child's own feet, the child walks through the fire. There were other Avodah Zarah, as the Rambam say, where they would actually burn their children alive for this idol. Here, by the Meilech, he wouldn't burn his child alive. He would just pass him through the fire. This is how they worshipped this Avodah Zarah called Meilech. This is the Shita of the Rambam. The Ramban, in Parshas Acharei Mois, has a different view. He holds that he would bring the child again and pass him through the fire, and again until the son or the daughter would be burnt alive in this idol. The Rambam says there was another Avodah Zarah that they did that. This Avodah Zarah, you would pass your child through the fire. Ulefichach therefore. If somebody practices this form of Avodah Zarah, but not to the Meilech idol, but let's say to another idol, then this person would be exempt from the punishment of Avodah Zarah. Why? Because as we explained throughout Hilchas Avodah Zarah, the only time a person is liable for Avodah Zarah is if they follow the traditions and the customs and the modes of this particular Avodah Zarah, the way it is the custom to worship this Avodah Zarah, besides the four things which are generic, and you would be liable if you do them with any Avodah Zarah, which is, you remember, bowing down, slaughtering an animal, burning incense or something else with Avodah Zarah, and libations of wine and other beverages. So the Rambam is saying, lefichach, if the Avodah Zarah of Meilech was to burn the child alive, chalila, so then any Avodah Zarah you would do this, you would be liable, even if it's not the tradition of the Avodah Zarah, because you're being makter, you're burning a living organism, in this case a child, to the Avodah Zarah, you would get the death penalty. But in the case of Meilech, which was a certain form of Avodah Zarah that was for the Meilech, you passed the child through fire, you didn't burn him. So let's say I go to the Baal Pa'ir, or to the Mercury, to Markulis Avodah Zarah, where you're supposed to throw stones or defecate yourself, and instead you pass the child through the fire for the Baal Pa'ir, the person wouldn't be liable for Avodah Zarah. Perhaps they would have to be punished in different ways for what they're doing to their child, but it's not part of the Avodah Zarah practice. Halacha Dalet. yimser lamoilach. The person is not liable to get the death penalty from heaven for avodah zarah, or the death penalty for stoning until the person, the father, gives over his child to the moilach, meaning to the priests who represent the idol, v'yaviroi biragloi be'esh derech havar. And in addition to that, he has to pass the child with his feet through the fire in the appropriate tradition and custom that they used to perform when they worshipped the moilach. But what happens if part of this is missing? Masar v'loi hever. He gave over his child to the priest to consecrate the child, but he did not take the child and pass him through the fire. Or, conversely, hevir v'loi masar. He passed the child through the fire, but he would not give the child over to the priests. Oisha masar v'hevir, but shaloi derech havar. Or, he gave over the child to the priests. He even passed the child through the fire, but he did not do it according to the tradition and the custom that was instituted as the right way and the appropriate way to worship this god called Moilach. For example, let's say they went on the side of the fire, or he held his child up. The child didn't walk with his own feet through the fire. He did not follow the practice of the Moilach, then Pater. Then, again, he may be liable for other things, but he is exonerated from the punishment for Avodah Zarah because he did not worship the Moilach according to the tradition that was established for the Moilach. Fascinating Allah. He is not liable for the punishment of Avodah Zarah until he gives over to the Moilach only some of his descendants, but some of them must remain behind. Shenemar, the Pasuk says, in Parshas Kedoshim, when it speaks about kares for Moilach, so the pasuk says, "V'chrati oisem mikerev amoy ki mizaroi nosan lamoilach." I will cut him off from his people because he has given to the Moilach mizaroi. So Chazal understand this to be miktsasay v'loy kula. It doesn't say zaroi nosan lamoilach. He dedicated his children to the Moilach. It says from his children. He took from some of his children and he gave them to the Moilach mizaroi. Part of Zarai. So what happens if he gives away all of his children to the Moilach? He does this with all of his children. He is not liable for the punishment of Avodah Zarah. Now, this is a very difficult halacha to understand. So the Rambam, in his Guide to the Perplexed, Moir Nevuchim, in the third section, the Rambam says something fascinating. He says that this was essential, this was an indispensable part of the tradition of worshipping the Moilach. Why? The priests used to brainwash the people under their domain, and sometimes Jews as well, and they would explain to them like this, that if they give up one child to the Moilach, to be consecrated to the Moilach, to pass through the fire, then all of their other children will survive and be blessed with abundance. What if they don't? Then the idol, the Moilach, will punish them and all the children will die. And the Rambam says some of the parents, who unfortunately were brainwashed by all the different types of cults of the time, believed it. So therefore they gave over one child or a few children to the Moilach in order that the other ones should be able to survive. So the whole idea of the Moilach is you're giving up one so that you could rescue the others. This is what the Rambam says in Moreh Nevuchim. I should just add that the Smag, the Sefer Mitzvahs Gadol, he explains the rationale for this halacha in Lo Yisa Asamem. The Smag says that whenever a person receives a punishment in this world, it's in order to cleanse their soul and their body from the horrible filth and blemishes that the sin creates in the soul, so the soul can return back to its Father in heaven pristine and pure and cleansed. He says sometimes a person performs such a heinous, heinous, evil, horrific crime that Hashem says, I don't even want to give a process of atonement to this person. And he says this is a case where somebody sends their whole family to the Moilach. Halacha hey, echad zera kosher ve'echad zera posel. No difference whether one has a child that is legitimate or a child that was born from an immoral relationship. Let's say somebody married a woman who was already married to somebody else, she never got a divorce, and they have a child. The child is a mamzer. If he gives that child over to the Moilach, it's the same halacha. We don't say, oh, it's not his child. It's the same halacha. And therefore, he would get skila. Echad banov ubnoisav. No difference if it's your sons or your daughters. Ve'echad bneihim ubnei bneihim. Also no difference if it's their children or their grandchildren. Al kol yoytze yirechay hu chayav mepnei shehin zarei. The person is liable for skila on any of his descendants. It could be a son, it can be a daughter, it can be a grandson, a granddaughter, a great-grandchild, no difference. The Torah says Zarai. Zarai doesn't say his children, it says his Zarai. Zarai means his seed. his seed. In other words, anyone who comes from his seed, any of his descendants, children or grandchildren or great-grandchildren, if he takes any of them and he passes them through the fire of the Moloch, this is Avodah Zarah, and he's liable to Skila or Kares or a Karban Chatos if it was B'Shegek. Avolim Hever Echa Vayach Yosef Vayach Vayosef Vayosef Hever, that's my Potter. But if he passes through the fire, his brothers, or his sisters, or his parents, or even himself, he is exonerated from Avodah Zarah. He may be seriously liable for a lot of other stuff he's doing. He may be cause somebody to die. He may cause somebody not to die, but terrible, terrible harm, and anguish, and pain, and medical expenses. Nezek Tzar, Ripui Shevet Boches, we're going to learn later in Rambam, the halachas, if somebody physically damages another person, puts them in fire, even if they survive, what the penalties are, what the liabilities are. But in terms of Avodah Zarah, this doesn't apply because the Torah commands us, the prohibition is Nasan Mizara Ilamailach, one of his descendants, not even himself, or siblings or parents or somebody else. Hevir Echad Mizare Vu Yashne Shahayasuma Pater. If he passes through the fire, one of his children, but he is asleep or blind, then again he is exonerated from the Avodah Zarah liability because the practice of the Mailach was that the child had to be awake and see the ceremony. Halacha Vav, the Rambam now shifts from Oiv, Yidoini, and Moilech to the next section of this halacha. The next mitzvah he's going to discover is discusses the violation against erecting a monument. Halacha Vav, Matzeva Shasra Torah, the monument that the Torah prohibits, as he will say in a moment, he binyin sheyiyu hakal miskaptzin etzla, is basically a violation against creating a monument, an edifice, with the purpose that everybody should gather to it. V'afilu lavedes Hashem. Certainly, if he creates a monument to attract people to engage in stupidity or idolatry, that's forbidden. But the chiddush of this mitzvah is, even if he erects a monument to bring people together to serve the Ribbono Shel Olam, it's still forbidden. Why? Shekein hoya derech avodah zarah. Because this was the tradition, this was the custom of idolatry. They would erect a monument and place the avodah zarah, the statue. They would erect a statue, a monument, and that's where people would come to worship the avodah zarah. Shenemar, the warning for this pasuk is, the source of this prohibition is a pasuk in Parshas Shoftim. V'lo yisakim l'chamatzei v'asher sanei Hashem elokecha. Do not erect for you a monument which Hashem loathes. V'chol hameikim matzei v'loike, somebody who does erect such a monument, of course, if they do it willingly with witnesses and they're warned, they are liable to the penalty of lashes, because it is a prohibition, it's a violation of a mitzvah loisasa in the Torah. The fascinating thing is, as Rashi points out from Sifri, that the Yaakov Avinu erected a matzeva for the Ribbono Shel Olam. It was a promise he made when he left his father's home in the beginning of Parshas Vayetze. Parshas Vayishlach, it says that Yaakov actually erected a matzeva for Hashem. So Rashi says, Afal pi shahuva hoisa b'mei ha'ovis, in the days of our forefathers, a monument was beloved by Hashem. But nonetheless, after Matan Torah, became a prohibited act. Why? Because once the idol worshippers embraced this as their custom, as their tradition, the way they worshipped and gathered the people to their idolatry was through erecting a monument for it. From that point, it became loathed, Asher Sanei Hashem Elokecha, and therefore, we are not allowed to do it. V'chein, similarly, another similar halacha, Evan Maskis, Hamura B'Torah. The Torah speaks about a kneeling stone that you're not allowed to bow down on top of it. Afal Pishu Mishtachva Le'el Hashem. Don't make a mistake. The Torah is not talking about if you're kneeling, if you're bowing down on stone to idolatry. That's the prohibition of worshipping idolatry. But the chiddush, the novelty of this mitzvah is, even though you're bowing down to Hashem on stone, it's forbidden. Shenemar, the pasuk says, Vayikra perik chavov, ve'even maskis leisitnu ba'artzichem leishtachavois aleha. Kneeling stone you should not place in your land to bow down on it. Why? Mipnei shekein hayaderech avaydazara leniach even lefonel leishtachavois aleha. Because this, again, was the tradition and the custom of those who were entrenched in idolatry. They would place stone in front of the idol or in front of the image, in front of the statue, and they would bow down on the stone to the idol. Therefore, we are forbidden to do the same thing, even if it's for Hashem. Even though I am bowing down on the stone to Hashem, to the one creator of the universe, it is forbidden. A person will not receive the penalty of lashes. Ad sheyifshoit yadav Viraglov ala evan venimtsa kule mutlala, until he does not spread out his hands and his feet on the stone, and he is completely lying on it, flat. Shazui ishtachavoya hamura b'tayra. Because this and only this is the true definition of bowing down that's described in the Torah. So when the Torah says, ve'evan maskis leisitnu ba'artzachem lihishtachavoysala, I don't want you to bow down on the evan. What does bowing down mean? Bowing down, the Rambam means you're completely flat on the ground. Your hands, your feet, your entire body from head to toe is on the stone, facing the stone, buried in the stone, so to speak. That is the form of bowing down that the Torah means. That's what the Torah means when it says lihishtachavos, and therefore this is the only thing that is biblically forbidden and potentially you're liable to receive lashes. Halacha zayin, b'med varim amurim, when was this said? B'shar mekaymus, in other places. Avol b'mikdash mutar lishtachavos l'Hashem ala avonim. In the Beis HaMikdash, it is permitted to prostrate yourself to Hashem on the stones. Shenemar, because the pasuk says, in that pasuk, v'yikra chavav lo'yisitnu ba'artzachem lishtachavos ala. Ba'artzachem enet ha'mishtachavim ala avonim. Avol at ha'mishtachavim ala avonim ha'mefutzolis b'mikdash. In your land, you should not place stone to bow down on it, even to Hashem. But in the Beis HaMikdash, on the hewn, paved, smooth stones of the Beis HaMikdash, over there you're allowed to bow down. That's where the Torah emphasizes, Leisitnu ba'artzachem, in your own lands, in the various places where you may be living, including in Eretz Yisrael. But in the Beis HaMikdash, the Torah clearly says the rules are different. You could bow down to Hashem on stones. And as the Mefarshim explained, that what the Rambam perhaps means here is because what's the problem? Why? What would be the difference? Why in the Beis HaMikdash are you allowed to? Avodah Zarah does it. We don't want to emulate Avodah Zarah. The idea is that outside of the Beis HaMikdash, when we build a monument or we bow down on stones, even if our intention is for Hashem, but the imagery, it may conjure up the similarity in our imagination with Avodah Zarah. Some people may even mistake that this is a form of Avodah Zarah. Some people may not even understand what it is, but in the Beis HaMikdash, that concern does not exist, and the Torah says you're allowed to bow down on the rocks in the Beis HaMikdash. Umipnezeh, therefore, Nagu kol Yisrael latzia machtzolis bebotei knesiyos haritzufos ba'avon. That's why it's the custom of all Jews to spread out mats in shuls that are paved with stones, oymine kash v'teven, or straw and hay, lahavdil ben pneim ben avonim, to separate between their faces and the stones, so when the Jews bow down, their faces will not be buried in the stone, because there are mats, rags, straw, hay below them. What if he doesn't find anything separating between him and the rock? Don't bow down here in shul. The Rambam says, go find another place where there's no stone and bow down there. But the Rambam says, however, there's another alternative. The person could lie on his side so that his face is not cleaving to the stone. So the person gets down, but you're lying on your side. You don't bow down flat so that your face is leaning, is connected to the Evan, is cleaving, so to speak, buried in the Evan. Halacha ches. What happens if I bow down to Hashem on hewn stones or smooth stones, paved stones, but I'm not spreading out my hands and my feet? I'm not flat. I'm not flat on the ground. That's not the case. As the Kesef Mishnah says, it's like we bow down on Yom Kippur, right? When we bow down on Yom Kippur, so let's say there's a stone floor and I get down on my knees. I get down on my knees and I put my head into the stone. It's like my head, my face is cleaving to the stone, but I'm not flat on the floor with my hands and legs spread out. So the Rambam says, Einoi loike. This person is not liable for lashes. Avol makinoise makas mardus. He is liable for rebellious lashes, which is basically when somebody violates a rabbinic injunction or law, so then the Beis Din sees what penalty might be fit for the transgressor, sometimes even a corporal penalty. The point is that to be over, to transgress a biblical violation, I have to be flat on the ground completely, on the rock, even if I'm bowing to Hashem. That's the biblical prohibition for Malkus. If I'm not flat on the ground, even if my head is touching the ground, like we do Kairim on Yom Kippur, we get down on our knees, we put our faces on the stone, but I'm not flat, rabbinically it's prohibited. But biblically, it's not. That explains why in the previous halacha, the Rambam didn't give for the shul a solution to do what we do on Yom Kippur. Just don't get down flat. The Rambam said, either leave, find another place, or lie on your side. Why didn't the Rambam just say, kneel and put your head down, but don't be flat, because rabbinically that would still be prohibited. That's all when you're bowing down to Hashem. Aval avodah zarah. If somebody's bowing down to avodah zarah, achas yishtachavoyah b'pishut yodayim v'raglayim, or yishtachavoyah b'loy pishut yodayim v'raglayim, it would be the same halach if somebody bows down completely flat, their hands and feet spread out, or without their hands and feet spread out, mishah sheyichbosh ponav b'karka lo niskal. The moment the person buries his hand, his head, the moment the person buries his head into the ground, he gets stoned. In other words, the practice of avodah zarah did not require that a person should bow down flat to the avodah zarah. Certainly, if he does that, he's liable for skila. But even if a person just kneels on his knees and then places his face on the rock or whatever it is, on the avodah zarah or near the avodah zarah, to bow to the avodah zarah, even though he's not flat on the ground, he would still be liable in avodah zarah. Over here, you don't need ishtachavaya, like we described before, the definition of ishtachavaya in Torah, which is flat. Sometimes those who are very athletic can even stand up straight and get their head down all the way to the karka, and that would be avodah zarah, ishtachavaya with skila. Halacha tes. The Rambam now goes over to the next mitzvah being discussed. If somebody plants a tree near the altar in the Beis HaMikdash or the entire courtyard of the Beis HaMikdash, which many Mefarshim say includes the inner sanctuary, and of course includes, that's where near the Mizbeach, or it includes the Azar, which would include the whole section known as the Ezras Koyhanim and Ezras Yisrael, which was part of the courtyard of the Beis HaMikdash, Bein Ilon Srak, Bein Ilon Meichel, whether it's a barren, infertile tree or a fruit-bearing tree, no difference what type of tree, Afal Pisha Asai Selinoi. Even if he did it with the sole objective of creating beauty and decoration as for aesthetical purposes to honor the Beis HaMikdash, nonetheless, this person is liable potentially to receive lashes. Shenemar, the Pasuk says in Parsha Shoftim, Lo yisita lecha asherah kol eitz etzel mizbech Hashem alekecha asher tasalach. You should not plant for yourself an asherah. An asherah is a tree that was worshipped as an idol. But then he adds, any tree near the altar of Hashem. Kol eitz etzel mizbech Hashem alekecha. Because this was the tradition of idolatry. They would plant trees near the altar of the idolatry in order to attract the people. They wanted to create an aesthetical ambiance, an environment that's appealing and attractive. They would plant trees in order to entice and inspire the people to come, engage in the idolatry. So the Torah prohibits us planting a tree, even if we're doing it for the covet of the Beis HaMikdash, for the covet of Hashem. Nonetheless, planting a tree near the Mizbeach or in the courtyard of the Beis HaMikdash is a violation of Torah. And the Rambam says a fascinating halacha. Sometimes you're doing something with the sole purpose to bring people closer to the Beis HaMikdash, to bring people closer to Hashem, as a decoration to the Beis HaMikdash. But if this is done through methods that the Torah prohibits, it's absolutely forbidden. Even if your intentions are to inspire people, you want to make them more comfortable, you want them to hang out by the Beis HaMikdash. But if this is something that Avodah Zarah has adopted, if this is their derech, you can be sure that this is something that Hashem loathes. If this is the methods that the Avodah Zarah found, this is the attractive way to get people, this is the best way to get people, you can be rest assured that this may be forbidden. And if the Torah says you're not allowed to do it, then you're not allowed to do it. Yud. For asur lasas achsadroyes shaleitz b'miktash derech shoyesim b'chatzeres. You're not allowed to, therefore, erect, construct porches of wood. Porches made of wood in the area of in the Beis HaMikdash and in the courtyard of the Beis HaMikdash, like we do in our yards. Afal pishu b'binyin v'eni eitz natua. Even though we're not planting a tree, we're just using lumber as part of the structure, nonetheless, harchaka yisera. This is an extra fence that the Torah gives us so that we shouldn't get close to planting a tree in the Beis HaMikdash. Even if the tree, again, is not planted in the ground, but it's just being used as part of the construction of a porch, nonetheless, it's forbidden. Shenemar, the Torah says, kol eitz, leisita lecha asherah, kol eitz. It doesn't say eight, it says kol eitz. Kol eitz, the Rambam says, is not only any type of tree, any form of a tree, in other words, even the derivative of a tree, using lumber in the courtyard of the Beis HaMikdash is forbidden. All the porches and the lattices that came out from the walls in the Beis HaMikdash were made of rock, not of wood.